Robots Radio. Games, lore, stories, community. Just press play.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, weary traveler. Need a short rest? Oh, I see. They said you'd be showing up about now. Come on, through the portal. Best not keep the Lore Mistress and Lore Master waiting. You know how they get.
Robots Radio presents the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. The best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello and welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio.
And I am Mary.
And we're continuing our Hotter Than the Nine Hells series here at the tower.
And boy, is it.
I was going to say very apt considering the plane of that the tower is located on, known as Texas.
The Lone Star Plain.
The Lone Star Plain. It's hotter. It's 105 degrees right now.
And it feels like
it's
15.
It is 6:30 in the evening as we record this, and it is well over triple digits. So
I saw the second highest number I have ever seen today on the temperature gauge on my vehicle. And
if
it said 112, and it hurt my feelings. That's disrespectful.
Imagine if I had one. It says it feels like 112.
Yeah, that's what my vehicle reads. The feels like.
Yeah, it's and like I said, that's nearly 7 o'clock in the evening.
Uh huh.
Like this time 20 years ago or so, like people would be like saying like, "Hey, it's nighttime. It's like Friends is about to be on. Like Seinfeld's gonna be on in an hour." And now it's like the middle of the hottest day. It's like noon on the hottest day, except
it's the time of the year where it's so hot that we're eating dinner after the sun starts to go down. So like anywhere from 9:30 to last night it was almost 11.
Yeah, it's not going to get under triple digits until like 9 o'clock.
Yeah, it's not doing any favors cooking on the west side of the house either. So
So we're very much in the Bator mood, so to speak.
It already feels like hell. So
right, except this particular layer that we're talking about today,
it's so hot we're gonna go to the coldest place in the nine hells.
Yeah, it's like a dry ice. It's so cold it's gonna burn you.
Yeah, that's accurate.
So what are we talking about this week?
We're talking about Stagia.
You've been on that like all week.
I have. But that's the last one.
No, there it's not. Is. That's a lie.
Let's try to make that the last one until my ADHD goes, "That's not important information. Don't need that." All right. But
so
the gremlins are in control.
What layer is this?
This is the fifth layer of the Nine Hells. This is the last sea of Bator. Almost all of this layer is completely frozen. most layers in the Nine Hells are balanced as far as elemental dominance goes, with the exceptions to that rule being Phlegethos, which is dominated by fire, and Stygia, which is dominated by ice. It's described as a great frozen sea, a place of crushing ice and mammoth icebergs. The only open area of water is the area where the river Styx moves through the layer the fastest. This is, waters are going so quick they can't freeze, I guess. And you can clearly see the division of the seawater and of the, you know, the River of Blood. Also, this is where the layer gets its name, Stygia.
Right, right.
Stygian. Much like, you know, right, like yeah, IRL.
I like the fact that this is frozen, and I'm not sure if it's going to get into the lore about why it's frozen, but I like to think that when creating the Nine Hells, a particular devil was like, you know what? There's going to be like some jerks that are like, I don't mind the heat. I actually prefer the heat. So you know what? This is going to be the hell for them.
This is for you. This is for you.
Like, I'd rather be hot than cold. I mean, I prefer that. Like, all right, I got something for you.
Yeah, see, they would send me straight to Phlegethos with the fires of hell because I hate the heat so much. If I were, you know, heading there. But I'm not. I'm a good guy, I think.
I'm a good guy, like, right?
I'm a chaotic chaos. It's what I am. That's my alignment.
Chaotic chaos.
Yes. So this lair is actually the only place where the River Styx runs in both directions, which leads many people to think that this is where the headwaters of it are actually found. Like, this is the starting point. Whether it is or not the starting point, the river's waters are more potent here. Coming into contact with it would put a blood at risk of losing not just their memories or their life, their entire memory itself is at risk as well. And I will clarify, as it's the entire erasure of the soul. They never were.
So you, in Stygia, you go into the River Styx and you are at risk of the complete erasure of your soul if you were to just like dip a toe
everything
in, maybe? Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Everything that ever was of you is gone. It's that much more powerful here.
Oh man, that's wild.
Terrifying. Oh yeah, that
too. I can't help but like everything, every like little bit of a lore. There's so many that like that I hear, and I'm like, that's going to be something that can be used later on in a homebrew adventure or campaign.
Yeah. I actually had a request from my players for something horror and terrifying and scary. And I'm sitting here researching the Nine Hells and I'm like, all right.
You asked for it.
You got it. Finger guns and everything.
Pew, pew.
Pew, pew. Let's go. But yeah, it's that is, you just never were.
You just never were.
Just never were. So the entire layer is primarily untamed wilderness. There's a lot of folks that seem to think that Stygia was originally a world in the prime material plane that was so, so very doomed, so completely screwed that the inhabitants all pledged themselves and their entire world to Asmodeus in exchange for their safety. This theory is somewhat supported a bit by the wide variety of creatures that are found here that are usually only found on the prime material plane.
Oh, I love that little bit of like theoretical lore.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, how screwed do you have to be, though?
I mean, like... like, look, things were said. Promises were made. Devils were worshipped. Archdevils were deified. You know,
it's fine.
It happens. It was the 60s, man. I don't know what to tell you.
It was the 60s.
It was 1974. 1974, Lake Geneva.
Oh, gosh. Okay. This layer was not always ruled by the current lord. Prior to Levistus being put into place here, it was once ruled by the archdevil Geryon. Even in this I will get into his history in a little bit. We're going to give a little more overview and then I'll break it down a little further. See, even in this icy wasteland, there are tiny Arctic plants even that struggle to dig their roots in deep enough to sap what little nutrients they can get from the unforgiving layer. The plants here grow the thickest in the icy swamps, which sounds like the worst place to be. I don't mind cold, but I don't want to be wet and cold. Those are not, I'm not in.
And dirty.
And like, yeah. And yeah.
Wet, cold and dirty.
Uh-huh. But this is where you could find refuge from the inhospitable environment, from the, you know, freezing to death and whatnot. But these areas do pose a different set of challenges.
Obviously.
Right. There's all these plants and roots going down through the layers, so ice is going to be thinner here. Makes your risk of plunging into the water even more likely. And this is also where the majority of those creatures that I mentioned before, majority of them feel more at home here in the swamp, like substantially more than you do, which is also a bit of a risk. These are things that you aren't going to typically associate with one of the layers of hell, which I found really, really interesting. You find things like frost worms, polar bears, dire wolves, kind of ice themed monsters, essentially, that are all at home here. There's also tribes of frost giants who wander completely unafraid of the devils that live here. You'll also find sharks, kraken, and mammoths as well. All of these are used as practice for the devils in their military training. Since they're here, you know, may as well make
use
of it.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, and I like that kind of harkens back to that theory that this was once, you know, at least part of the prime material plane, because
exactly,
you know, these are all, for the most part, creatures and animals that you would find, mm-hmm. you know, rooting around
some of the
mm-hmm.
some of the realms that I'll discuss here in a moment also kind of pull that theory in a little bit more as well. So as far as I'm concerned, I feel like that's probably where it originated. I'm just going to go ahead and say I err on that side of it. The sky hangs low and heavy, with lightning streaking across its vastness, the looming threat dancing wildly ahead of the rolling thunder that's reverberating across the entire layer. It creates this steady, subtle, thunderous roar, like just that undertone is just there all the time. The majority of the land here is ice floes and bergs. Several of them are actually large enough to build entire cities and castles on or in some cases. There are a couple deities that even keep their realms here on this layer as well. One of them's below the sea, the other above. The rulers of both are vying to wrest control of the layer from Lavestis. One's brutal and straightforward, the other subtle as a scorpion in the shade. Now, the two folks mentioned here are Sekola and Set. Their realms are Sheirushk and Ankhugat, respectively. We'll tell you a little bit about Set's realm. This is the realm of the Midnight Desert, of the sighing winds across the poison sands. Hear the bellowing of crocodiles on the riverbed at night and bow down before the power of Almighty Set. That is a quote from the Lord of Evil and Defiler of the Dead himself.
That's both an awesome and terrible nickname.
That is such a disgusting nickname, but wow.
Like, yeah, like, what exactly does that mean? Because, like, well, on one hand, it could be, like, awesome. Like it sounds like a Cannibal Corpse song. But on the other hand, it, like, sounds like something that, like, that dude's gonna
what
be.
What did you do?
That, yeah, like, why did, how you did like you this? Get that nickname? That's
exactly. Well, Set is actually considered the greatest evil in the entire Mulhorandi pantheon. I will absolutely love to get into that at some point, but this is not that point. We are talking about Stygia at this point in time. That is on my, I had to cut off the rabbit hole. I'm not allowed to venture off course into that right now.
Not right now, but soon.
Not right now. I can do this later. It is an actual literal desert on the frozen expanse of the fifth layer of the Nine Hells. It is this little section that is completely different. It is not any of the iciness, its own little desert. And Set sits within his pyramid in the center of his realm. And from his room in the base of it, he can see the entirety of the realm on the wall. And it is described as if the wall of the pyramid were a huge magnifying window. Dude's got an interactive mini map as a wall.
Nice. I mean that's a DM's dream, I believe.
It is. Yeah, it's great. He can even see into people's homes and the minds of everyone within his realm. There are no secrets here, apparently. Personal space, never heard of her. I do not I really, really, really don't want to undersell the sheer size of the pyramid, though. Like, this is not just a pyramid. No matter where a fella happens to find himself within Set's realm, you're always aware of it. Because you see, you can always see this ginormagantuan black pyramid rises up, and it meets the eternally dark sky above. It's described as a sooty black streaked with bloody reds and oranges that like change position around the spire of the pyramid depending on the time.
Oh, interesting.
Right. These are brighter at midday and kind of dim and are nearly invisible at midnight. So the shadow of this pyramid is so big, you cannot avoid it unless you are actively trying to hide from it, being indoors or underground.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, there's some leeway, some wiggle room there.
Some wiggle room, but it's still dark outside. You know you're still living in that thing's shadow.
For sure, for sure.
And it doesn't matter which direction you go from, because it's always going to fall. The shadow
it's always
falls
there.
Over, yeah, always. It's when someone's giving you directions in Enquigot, they describe, like, if you're moving toward the pyramid, as toward the dark. And then if you're moving away, it's into the shadow. Like, it's that part of, oh yeah, you got to go, you know, go into the shadow, take a left, and so you know which way you're going from it. It's inhabited, this place is, by numerous mummies and liches who occasionally go out on trade missions to other locations and other layers of the hells.
Like an Oregon Trail, but in hell. Yeah. We gotta make the
Oregon
trek.
Trail.
The Oregon Trail. We're off to ship off these stolen organs.
Oh, they probably
for
come
souls.
In. Oh man, I'll talk about the soul shipping here in a wee bit. That is a thing I mentioned later. Beautiful, beautiful foreshadowing. So the depths of the cold ocean hold horrors beyond compare. Waves come and go, but the ocean remains, as do all the creatures in it. Endurance is a virtue, and the weak must be eliminated. The stinging bite of the briny sea is the taste of victory and defeat.
What about the hands?
What about the hands?
You know, the feet. What about the hands?
The hands. What about the hands? You're not supposed to taste the hands. That's what you eat the feet and the victory with.
I'm sorry for that. I don't know what came over me. Let's continue.
I'm sorry. So we were talking about, this is Sheyrush. This is the realm of Sekola, the great shark, a.k.a. the caller from the depths. He makes his home here in Stygia, but is known to swim throughout Bator, where it can find enough water to maneuver, and when the prey is worth making the trip, no point in going if it's not worth your time. The inhabitants of his realm go on frequent raids trying to expand it. Sekola is convinced that if Levistus, the Lord, would only step out of his little like ice cube for a couple minutes there, he'd be shark meat, and Stygia would have a new lord. Sheyrush is hidden not too far from the city of Tantlin, which we will get to here in just a couple minutes. It's in a valley between icebergs on the surface, and below the surface, though, this realm is far, far larger. The center of it is called the Coral Throne, and this is where Sakola rules from. That is to say, when it chooses to be there and be in Sawagan form. This is where all of his petitioners would seek an audience and ask for, you know, blessings and guidance and stuff like that from the god. If you happen to be a petitioner there and seeking an audience, ask for the blessing or guidance here. You're going to want to stick to the center of the city.
Wait, why is that?
Well, oceans are scary. That's my reason. Oceans are scary.
Oh, well, that's it.
So the further out you go from the center, the larger things get and the more dangerous they get.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. You don't want to. Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, you do have to be careful, though. The ocean floor here in the realm, it's, you know, speckled with all kinds of corals and lovely and pretty until you get caught by one of the currents. And that just sweeps you out into the depths before you know it. It's too late by then. Most of the population here is sharks and barracudas. They're nearly as common as petitioners in the location, all of which are comfortable in the waters here and are also immune to the effects of the Styx. Visitors, though, they find the waters to be practically freezing, like it's extremely uncomfortable. But I wouldn't make a fuss about it. Like, just don't say anything. Just suck it up, Buttercup, because anyone that's complaining, like anyone complaining about this, is seen as weak and useless and is immediately ripped to shreds.
I mean, that's pretty on par or pretty much on brand for hell, you know.
Mm-hmm,
I would guess
also
that,
shark god. Come on.
I would guess hell, you know, would suffer no fools, sort of thing.
Which is ironic because it seems like a lot of fools keep going there.
It's one of those, you know, it's one of those things, you know, it's like a snake eating itself. It's just keep itself going.
It just keeps going. All petitioners and those that are traveling with them, folks that are servitors of the power, are all immune to the effects from the Styx River. While you are in the realm, it has no effects there. But once you leave, you are once again on your own. So I mentioned the city before, Tantlin. This is the largest city in Stygian. Do you want to guess what its title is? Because you know they all have one. You know, it's the city of...
Okay, so this is a frozen... This uh-huh, is the largest uh-huh. city on a frozen plain of hell. So uh-huh. I'm going to say something like the city of demonic ice, or the city of hellish ice or fire ice or something.
It's just ice. It's just the city of ice.
Oh, that's kind of, I mean, like, yeah, it's appropriate, but it's a little disappointing.
It is a little disappointing. It is, but it's okay. The city is a interesting one and makes up, I guess, for it. The city of ice was once ruled by Geryon. This is the devil previously known as the Lord of the Fifth. That's where he ruled from. It's currently under different administration, though, now, and is governed, I use this term loosely, by a pit fiend whose name that nobody knows. Because if she's around, if she's close enough to find out her name, it kind of just spells doom for anybody in the vicinity. Nobody wants to know.
So that sounds like something that someone would just make up.
Oh, absolutely. You could plug whatever you wanted to in there.
Well, I mean, no, I'm saying like, hey, what's your name? Like, oh, I can't tell you because if anyone knew my name, it would destroy everything. It's like, oh, wow. Okay. I guess we're never going to know your name then.
If I tell you, I have to kill you, and then actually follows through.
Right. Right.
So Geryon was once an angel. I'll give a little of his history, the previous lord, and since this is where he ruled from. He was once an angel of the champion of He Who Was. He and his six companion angels were sent to face some threat at the end of the Dawn War. Might have been a primordial. Wasn't really clear. What happened was four of his companions were killed. The three that weren't, himself included, had their bodies and souls crippled in the battle. Supposedly, He Who Was used the essence of the two weaker ones to restore Geryon, leaving him as the only survivor of this brutal fight. And that is where the imagery of him with three torsos heads comes from, is from this, because he was three souls into one.
All right.
Though when they were combined, the other souls didn't completely lose themselves. Over time, this patchwork cobbling together of three souls and the magic used in that cursed him. He was cursed to feel their emotions, to feel their thoughts, and forced to relive all of their anguish. It was this little fact that Asmodeus used to eventually sway Geryon to the side of evil. He could silence those voices, you see. Asmodeus merged the pieces of his broken psyche, and the memories of his brethren became hazy memories and not these like intense, vivid moments that he could still feel. But he couldn't reunify his body, leaving Geryon with three torsos that resembled the dead angels that he once was. And he kind of alternated which one he was talking from, depending on his mental state, either manic or furious or cunning.
Little Demogorgon action going on here. I love it.
Little Demogorgon. During Geryon's rule, there were monuments made in his honor. One such monument, called the Pillar of Geryon, depicted him cutting off right hands and replacing them with fiendish versions, which would then require the wielder to commit evil deeds in order to retain the power they gained from it. Idle hands.
I was thinking idle hands.
I
for sure 100%
have not seen it in forever, and I'm gonna have to go. I'm gonna go hunt it down and watch it.
I don't know
it,
that I've
after
ever
reading
seen it.
This,
I know of it.
It is so bad. You have to watch it. It's so dumb. It is the worst, and it's the best because of it. But I'm gonna have to go watch it because that's exactly what I was thinking of the whole time. See, it was during the Reckoning, when sides were chosen and lines were drawn, that Geryon played the role of conspirator against Asmodeus, pretending, while secretly remaining loyal to him. He played his cards, he set his plans into motion, and at the point when the other lords thought that they were there, it was happening, they were going to finally usurp Asmodeus, Geryon turned and helped him retain his power. So for his trouble, Asmodeus stripped him of his power and authority anyway, and he was exiled. And he placed Levistus as the Lord of the Fifth.
All right. I mean, that's... You could definitely fail worse than that.
Well, you can't get... I'm just saying, you're working with all of these evils and whatnot. You get real close to Asmodeus, you start helping him, you kind of learn his battle plans, and you're his buddy. Of course he has to cut you off. You can't let anybody get too close.
Right,
come
exactly.
On. Like, come on. When he was exiled, he was forced to abandon Tantlin, his seat of power, and the dragon-like hoard of treasure beneath it. He has since regained control of one of his oldest dwellings, though, the Citadel Coldsteel, which is a fortress that he had secretly constructed by carefully hollowing out an iceberg deep in Stygia with, it was described this way, precision comparable to a surgeon's use of a scalpel.
Yeah, but what surgeon? You know, because...
Like a good surgeon or like a bad
like
surgeon?
Like a Dr. Giggles type situation?
Yes, of course. before he had found himself replaced, Geryon kept himself busy by luring powerful prey from outside of Batur so he could hunt them in his hometown, in his home base. After this exile, he became more concerned about, you know, regaining his power. So he carefully crafted himself an army of mercenaries, fiends, like Zariel. Schemed, planned, and finally brought open warfare against Lavistus, turning the frozen wasteland of Stygia into a full-on war zone. And so outside of all of the devils reserved for fighting in the Blood War, the rest were either fighting for Geryon or for Lavistus and are constantly trying to just gain the upper hand on one another.
I mean, makes as far as devils go, it makes sense. That's kind of what devils do. They're always just trying to
devil's gonna devil.
Yeah, and one up each other, get in where, you know, get the position that the other one is in. And Asmodeus probably, for his part, let me guess, just kind of chilling back in the cut. Like,
oh,
not
you
really,
know he is. He is doing. He is
letting them
fiends.
Take care of themselves.
This man is pitting fiends against each other on all the layers of the hell so that they all continue to do their jobs to try to impress him, but not so that anybody has enough time on their hands to come after him.
Right, that's the last thing he wants.
Genius. Exactly. He doesn't step in or interfere at all. He just lets it happen. Geryon is still harvesting souls, in fact, and serving Asmodeus. He's hoping to regain favor. He's just been kissing ass since he was exiled and trying to do for himself. He wants to regain that favor, and he wants to try to take Stygia back from Lavistus, but he'd have to pry it from the frozen prince's cold, wet fingers. So, in a way, these two sort of co-rule the fifth layer, but it's not a cooperative thing like Belial and Fierna ruling Phlegethos.
Right.
This is more, no, pick me, I'm better sort of a way. They rule together, but it's in an openly hostile and violent way.
Right. Okay. Like, I mean, again, both the way that Belial and Fierna rule makes sense as far as devils go, because it's very, like, it's cooperative in the sense that, like, they're doing it because it benefits them. If Fiona's like, I'm only doing this because it's to my advantage.
Right. I get to be in charge and I also get to keep my comforts. Exactly.
Right. And this one is also very much in keeping with devils because they're just aggressively hostile toward one another.
Yeah. Like, there's exactly not the tricksy sort, but the openly, I want to fight you.
Right.
So currently, Tantlin is ruled by this unknown pit fiend who has only one law. The strong should survive. That's it. That's what it's like in Tantlin now without Geryon here. See, the streets here run themselves, kind of. Gangs of, you know, planers and Batuzu basically roam the streets, policing them as they see fit. But all of the gangs agree on one thing only. And folks that are important to the city's infrastructure, they're not to be interfered with. They're not going to be, you know, traders, repairmen, etc., merchants, things like that that come through. Don't mess with any of these guys. That might get the pit fiend involved, and nobody wants the boss involved.
The pit fiend whose name nobody knows, because if somebody did, everything would die. Yeah, I don't think anyone really wants
nobody
to.
Nobody wants to know.
I don't think anyone wants
to. Those
that
stay
really
out of. Nobody wants a. What?
Like, no one really wants to get. Mm-mm. That sort of power involved.
Mm-mm. I want no part of it. Those that stay out of those squabbles too are left alone. Pretty much, don't start nothing, won't be nothing, to quote Agent J from MIB.
Of course. That's, of course. That's quote Agent J.
Oh, come on. A Men in Black reference in D&D, I think, is valid. I think it's valid. They pretty much each control their own little areas of town and are doing the thing the gangs do, trying to expand their territory without incurring the wrath of the pit fiend. And this tickled me because I kept reading, you know what my brain does. And it's just one of those, that's another show for our D&D network. Or a movie, maybe a full-length feature. Rival gangs of devils ruling the streets of Tantlin. All of them seeking to expand their turfs while keeping the owners of the local establishments safe from harm. They don't want to disrupt the city's infrastructure. You know, worse, catch the eye of their mutual boss, whose name is unknown, but trust me, her reputation precedes her. This season on Gangs of Stygia.
I mean, that voice makes it seem more like Grease than Gangs of New York. But I'm picking up what
like
you put down.
West Side Story musical yeah. gangs, but
yeah, like West Side Story slash Grease. But I'm picking up what you're putting down for sure. You know,
but seriously though, if open warfare does spill out into the streets there, you should run for cover, get gone before you get got.
You know, more that huge brawl scene in Anchorman than Sons of Anarchy, but I'd watch it either way.
I'm just gonna say, if it was my players, it would lean more towards the Anchorman thing,
right?
It's gonna always fall on that side of the line, I think. Despite the risks involved in it, though, Tantlin is a massively important trading point due to its location. It is located directly on the bank, one of the banks of the River Styx. So it's a dangerous place, but necessary. I think this is about that time where we should probably hop over and do all that middly stuff that we do, like in the middle of
the show.
Yeah,
let's do that.
And then we come back. We'll sit and take a look out into the harbor of Tantlin and see what's there.
Probably nothing good. Say that right now. I'm gonna go out on a limb.
Yeah.
Whatever's out there.
You're guessing.
Gonna try
whatever's
to
in the harbors of the last sea of hell.
probably not
a good thing.
Yeah, probably not. Welcome to the middle of the show, where we talk some D&D news. We take a look at the DMs Guild or other websites to look at some homebrew shenanigans, because D&D is like the cherry on top of a fantastic sundae. The game is great, but the homebrew just makes it that much better. It completes it, I feel. And then, of course, as always, we thank the patrons. Want to give a special shout out to the old Boot Continent Argument, our newest patron. Thank you so much for signing up. I don't know if that's a family name or perhaps a title that that you've garnered, old Boot Continent Argument. I'm not sure what is if the first name is, if like the old is like a kind of like, you know, like a honorific of sorts. And then Boot Continent is the first name, Arguments the last name. I'm not exactly sure how any of that works. I just want to thank you for supporting the show.
Sounds like a title. They got title. They got title. We see here, we talk about people that are Prince of Betrayal. We got, you know, stuff like
for
that.
For sure, yeah.
And also, I want to point out that this is the middle of the middle, because we're at the middle of the Nine Hells, fifth layer. So we're in the middle of the middle. Indeed. It's the middliest.
The middliest of layers. And the middliest of the episode. So yeah, thank you so much to all of our patrons, especially. Yes. And
you guys are awesome.
If you want to support the show in that way and get bonus content, patron plus installments, bonus episodes, merchandise as well, an invitation to the patron roundtable each and every month, or even have one of us run a game for you or be part of your own game for a session, you can head on over to patreon.com/dndlorecast and check out all the different tiers that we have there.
Yep.
And to support the show in other ways, you can do all the usual stuff.
What are those things?
5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, all that sort of stuff. Following us on all the social medias. You're pretty much everywhere. We're DND Lorecast on your Twitters, on your TikToks, on your Instagrams. We already have a Twitch account that we're going to launch soon. So if you want to go ahead and be an early adopter, go ahead and follow us now. By all means, do so.
Get in there and say you were one of the
first.
Exactly.
Like, hey, we followed them before they even streamed. You could be like one of those, like,
we followed them before they
one
were
of those
things.
Lorecast hipsters.
I knew about it. Oh my gosh, Lorecast. I knew it, but I liked it before it was cool.
But any and all support is very much appreciated and is very humbling. You can't thank everyone enough for helping us build this awesome community.
True. You guys are the best.
And as far as D&D news goes, not much. Like, we're just talking about that before we started recording.
Often hearing
that, you know, everything kind of quiets down prior to a new book release. Everything sort of, mm-hmm. you know, kind of bottlenecks towards yep. that. And so, with Bigby Presents Glory of the Giants coming out in just a couple of weeks, that's seemingly what mm-hmm. everyone is talking about. Like, the past two mm-hmm. weeks of the official Dragon podcast, the official Dragon Talk D&D podcast has been about yep. Glory of the Giants. Definitely recommend you checking those interviews out with the some of the creative, the writing, the head writer, James Wyatt, and also okay. the art director behind the book as well. They talked to both of them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we're very excited about that book coming out. It seems to be a little mm-hmm. more lore heavy. It seems to be more along the lines of a Van Richten's, or it seems very much more like Fizbin's Treasury of Dragons, which was one of the last books that Wyatt worked on.
Fizbin's is... always forget how amazing that book is until it gets brought up. I'm like, oh yeah, that's at the top
of
the
list.
One's
awesome.
It is one of my favorites. It is. There's so many though, because like you could name almost any of them. I'm like, oh yeah, that one's great.
So yeah, like I said, like not much as far as news goes, but definitely keep an eye out for mm-hmm. any news concerning new books.
Right.
Well, Baldur's Gate is coming mm-hmm. out in just a couple of weeks. Everyone is very excited about that.
This is true.
They're very excited about mm-hmm.
And they have the most recent drop of playtest material too was a pretty hefty.
Oh yeah,
one.
Like we discussed that last week, but I mean, I don't know
yeah,
that you'd
be... I was gonna say. I mean, there's still time to go through and poke at it. I
mean, yeah, there's it's 70 pages worth, 70 plus.
If you need something to do while you're waiting on the new book to come out, I don't want to wait anymore.
And as far as homebrew stuff, once again, we're going to highlight Hellbound Heists, which is a 9 heist adventure book for each layer of hell. From such folks as John Parker, Justice Armin, Christopher Walls. It's a murderer's row of content creators of creative minds. And for Stygia, we've got Mission Broken Heaven.
Ooh.
It's a level 14 to 16 adventure. A number of beings all want a trapped angel for themselves. And one of them is desperate enough to ask for the help of mortals. So again, like these are all heist adventures based on a different layer of hell.
I love that.
Easily can be incorporated into a campaign or just run as like separate one shots or run each of them together as a campaign.
I do know somebody running a one shot this Friday for her team.
There you go. And you can get the PDF.
They asked me for awful.
And you can get the PDF for only $15.95, or you can get yourself a physical copy for a little bit more.
Yes.
That being said, let's go ahead and jump back into the show and finish talking up a storm about Stygia.
I stopped myself.
There have been a couple of times in the episode I knew you wanted to say it.
It hurts. Self-control hurts me.
Welcome back. And when we last left the lore mistress and myself, we were talking about Stygia. We're going to talk about the Tomb of Levistus.
Ooh, yes,
which,
yes, yes, we are. See?
Just, you know, everything about that just is just lore personified. I love it. It's like a snapshot
really
of like lore, and I love it.
Well, it does seem a wee bit problematic, what with him being the Lord of the Fifth. And the whole, you know, entombed bit. So there is another important ice flow close to Tantlin. This is what I mentioned previously, out in the harbor of it. That is the home of Prince Levistus, Lord of the Fifth, the Prince of Betrayal. From within his iceberg, where he is entombed, Levistus knows everything that happens on this layer. Even though he cannot leave and he cannot move. He's totally aware of every single thing that happens and deploys his troops as needed while he schemes from within his glacial prison. The cant is, Levistus actually controls all of the Amnesu. So let's talk a little bit more about the Lord of the Fifth, the actual Lord of the Fifth. Levistus's true appearance is not widely known. The ice of his glacial prison kind of makes it difficult to discern anything about his features. He's only a small black blob about a quarter mile away, so half of a kilometer. Up close, he's a 6 foot or 1.8 meters tall, extremely pale humanoid with a neatly groomed goatee and dark hair. He could easily pass as just some random good-looking dude if it weren't for the pointy teeth and the black voids for eyes that, quote, radiate darkness. I'm pretty sure that's what it says in his Tinder
it's
profile.
It's always like, yeah, it's, yeah, I mean, I can imagine.
It always is. They're always handsome devils with dark eyes that radiate darkness and evil.
I can imagine, someone going out on a date with him and, like the friend saying, like, hey, didn't you go out on a date with some dude you met on Tinder? It's like, oh yeah, like he was cute. Like he was really cute. His grill was a bit busted and his eyes just kind of made me sad.
Not by anything I did, just by
looking at them.
Just by being here. Essentially, yes. When he was still free, Levistus would appear before mortals in projected human form. He would don, I swear you wrote this, if I didn't know better, I would have thought it was you, fanciful garments and other finery.
Why would I have written that?
That is something you would say, and you have
probably
said.
I'm not going to deny it. I was just wondering why, but you're right.
That's whose voice I read it in when I was reading through it the first time. So when he appeared as an aspect, the air around him would be extremely frigid, and his clothes were like partially frozen, kind of partially dripping. It's like that meat that you left on the kitchen counter to thaw this morning. It's kind of like that. He would challenge his foes to one-on-one duels, not only because he could usually win, but also because of chivalry. He had a sense of honor and fair play regarding such things. As all lords of layers of hell, gotta have that sense of honor. Before his imprisonment, Levistus was a legendary swordsman. He was a swashbuckler, relied on these exceptional skills to fell his foes, mostly relying on defensive ones to drive them back, and also knew when to flee if he was bested. Much like the Styx devils that serve him, Levistus could use his touch to drain folks of their memories. It could leave them temporarily stunned, it's like a few seconds or something, or wipe their memories of the past completely, leaving them with their skills, though. They could still do all the stuff, just could remember nothing. And this, he would follow up with, taunting them with little hints about who and what they were, rather than just outright killing them. The condition itself, though, was reversible with use of greater restoration. He also came preloaded with some ice magic, ice storm, wall of ice. He could command and enthrall others or create symbols of pain. Use these techniques to divide and conquer if it looked like he wasn't going to end up getting that one-on-one that he wanted so badly. He would just demolish them instead this way. He could summon pit fiends and Gelligons. But usually he only did so if someone was interfering with his dueling. Of course, in his current condition, he has to rely on more of his spellcasting abilities, clairvoyance, scrying, things like major image, unholy aura, wish, and usually he would also summon aid, since he can't just get up and go do it himself. Oh my gosh, his nose has to itch so bad. Frozen there, you can't move. You know it's gotta itch.
Oh, I was like, what, like, what point, like, I was confused as to what point you were making, like, does your nose need to itch? Like,
no, it just, it hit me out of nowhere. I was like, man, this man is frozen completely still. Oh my God, yeah. I bet he has an itch, right, and he can't scratch it. That's got to be the worst part of all of it.
Got it. Because he's frozen. I get it. Okay, fair enough.
Because he's frozen. Over time, Levistus was able to learn to fully concentrate on controlling his network of agents. And he was able to, like, he plans every minute detail of his stuff out. Like, every tiny little box ticked off for, you know, his plans for Stygia and for those, you know, beyond it. Because he's got bigger aspirations. I guess. You would kind of have time to practice that if you're locked away in isolations in silence and in total stillness.
Right, yeah, plenty of time to,
like, you got
time. You got the time, bro.
He's got some time to do some of those things. His prison is protected above and below, but lower level guys, they're known to let a fella in if you pass him a little coin, so, you know, that is if you're trying to, you know, sneak in, maybe take a peek at the frozen prince. Take a little look, see.
Take a selfie.
Take a little selfie. The ice that this is made from, this entire tomb is made from, is ancient. Like, even by devil standards, it's considered old. It's resistant to magic, so you can't just, like, poof, teleport him out of it. The shape of it can be altered, but any attempt to free Levistus causes the iceberg itself to regenerate. And it seems that the only one that can free him is Asmodeus. And Asmodeus does, yearly, just the one time a year, so that Levistus can attend the yearly Archdevils of Nessus jamboree and potluck thing that they do.
Oh, is that what they do?
That's what the meeting is, right? Is it not a jamboree and potluck?
Yeah, they got a bluegrass band. They got the best chili side of Avernus.
I bet they do. Ooh, the lower levels get the hotter peppers.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. So despite the magical nature of the ice, there are parts of the berg that have been kind of carved out into icy tunnels and chambers and vaults. All of this is attended by a full ice devil militia. It kind of winds upward, making this part of his prison look more like a palace instead. But it's not like you can actually get up there to see it without being spotted. Guards here use the magical qualities of the ice to spy on would-be trespassers, you know, heroes and rescuers of failed heroes, etc. Possibly one of the worst threats here is the intense cold, maybe. It keeps the bodies perfectly preserved, and it utilizes magic to keep mortals alive. So they're just stuck there frozen and alive. Those trapped here in the Halls of Frozen Memory are sentient, but are usually absolutely insane. Their inescapable screams and absolute nonsense that they're constantly uttering just creates this terrifying, echoing, unsettling ambiance around you. Occasionally, you might find someone who hasn't gone completely insane, but I would advise against spending too much time there chatting, lest your stillness allow the ice to take you as well.
Yeah, best to probably just move along.
Yeah, sorry about your luck, homie.
I gotta go.
Exactly. The souls that are delivered here have a similar fate to that. They are actually unloaded down on the docks at the bottom of the berg. They are shipped in and unloaded on the docks. And I love it. It's so not appropriate that I love it, but I do. They're then forced to walk the halls here. If they don't continue walking, you know, whenever they eventually stop, they become Freezy Pops too. If you're visiting here, though, because you are invited, you would see the area where the furnishings and decorations are all beautifully crafted and carved from this crystalline ice. It is so intensely cold there, so you don't like forget who you're there seeing, but it's fanciful so that you're reminded of class and of riches. Levistus also offers the warmth of flesh to his visitors in this cold place to keep them warm. His succubi servants report back any info that they've gleaned, take that information back to him. I mean, this is assuming that you are allowed to actually access the prince himself and not just some intermediary for him. Levistus himself, he's found 100 feet inside the peak of a towering rampart, reaching, it's like you can reach it by scaling this massive spiraled staircase.
There is of nothing ice. More D&D hell than that.
Oh yeah. He is stuck in the frozen top of this tower that you have to climb the spiral ice staircase to get up to. And anyone who is foolish enough to even do this to try to see him or, you know, speak to Levistus, you would be able to do so across the span of a 60-foot or like an 18-meter, like a gulf, just this ravine. It's a spectacular view, but the winds up there are intense and violent and dangerous. And also, you can see the devil, like the flying devil, spiraling up above his tower where he's kept. They're accompanied by an ancient white dragon.
Oh, interesting.
So if you can make it past freezing to death, the insanity screaming and climbing this massive staircase, the winds, icy winds whipping from every direction trying to destroy you, and you know, the devils and the dragon, maybe you could say hi.
What I'm interested in is, what is a white dragon, an ancient white dragon at that, doing in a pit of hell or a lair of hell?
Guess what I didn't let myself go down a rabbit hole of for certain reasons. Oh, oh yeah, no, I'm gonna go find out. I need to know too. It's fine. So I've talked about Levistus being frozen a lot, and I know that at least a couple of you are probably wondering, why the heck is the ruler of the fifth encased in a block of ice? That kind of seems, that's not an everyday thing, you know?
For sure.
So I'm gonna tell you guys a couple tales before I eventually stop running my mouth. Like many tales we tell you here on the Lorecast, there are a few variations about the exact nature of the relationships of people involved. And mayhap some betrayal, some lust, some anger is involved in this story here. So we'll start with what we know. What we know is that Levistus is an old devil. He is immeasurably old. Was one of the first to attempt to overthrow Asmodeus, fell to the temptation that so many do when they ascend power. He immediately began chasing the hides, that gotta have more. He betrayed Asmodeus and was punished. It's as simple as that, right? The immediate implication of moves for power was not the only transgression that got him punished, you see. While Bensosia, consort of Asmodeus and mother of Glacia, was visiting Stygia, inspecting the lair, Levistus ambushed her. Now, the how and the why are somewhat disputed, but essentially what we're told is it was either a nonviolent meeting or Levistus massacred her bodyguards, with the exception of one single guard, Martinet, the Asmodeus's constable. Following this, Levistus either offered to make Bensosia his queen if she helped him to overthrow her husband, because who would better know Asmodeus's weaknesses?
Exactly.
Right. So either he offered it or he took her by force. And either way, she refused him and he murdered her. This is what we were told. Sounds simple, right? Murdered her, gets in prison.
Simple enough. Yeah.
Simple enough. Okay.
Just a little case of murder.
A little case of murder. But this is D&D.
Yeah, what's a little murder amongst devils?
And they're devils. Right. So that's the story that was told through the Nine Hells. But I'm going to give you a little bitty important fact here for context. A couple facts. Bensosia hated Asmodeus. She was a conquest trophy to him. Used her to create progeny that he hoped he could one day, you know, manipulate and wield in planes other than Bator, where he's imprisoned. He hoped that Glacia's mother's blood would allow her to travel to other places and help him conquer the plains. To be fair, though, she kind of thought of her daughter that way, too. She thought of Glacia as a pawn to use against Asmodeus, both sides using her as leverage and pitting her back and forth against one another in a constant vie for power, essentially. So the alternative to the narrative told throughout the Hells is that Bensosia did not refuse Levistus. She accepted. They used one another as lovers and as a way to undermine Asmodeus. But unfortunately, you know, work relationships like that and sleeping with the boss's old lady, that doesn't end well.
Now that's how people become the Joker, at least in Tim Burton's Batman movie.
This is true. It was during a visit that Glacia, seeing the Lord of the Fifth, became enamored with him. She saw a lover, and he saw an opportunity. A very unique opportunity that puts him in a position to possibly further divide Asmodeus's household, maybe turning them against him. And it was because of this that Levistus indulged the princess's affections as well and began a secret tryst with her too. Levistus knew this game that he was playing was extremely dangerous. He knew all too well what Glacia would do if she found out. It would be violent. She would react violently out of rage and out of jealousy. And there would be some sort of a crime of passion. Oddly enough, Bensosia, her mother, would have a very similar reaction if she had found out.
Yeah,
I
totally agree. Yeah,
feel is
absolutely
valid.
100%.
I'm going to go with valid. See, Asmodeus and then this kind of, he kept this going on for a while. This worked for a bit, as it often does, until Asmodeus and Glacia had gotten into another one of their disagreements. The princess fled her father's presence. She ran to the arms of her lover and found them occupied by her mother.
That is...
This ignited her.
Some that's some Jerry Springer type stuff.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it is.
Rest in peace to the king.
Rest in peace. My little white trash heart is so happy about this. You see, this did, in fact, ignite Glacia's temper, turning the bitter hatred she kind of already had for her mother, like she was not a fan to begin with. It turned that into a murderous rage, and it led to her supposedly sneaking into her mother's palanquin and slitting her throat.
I mean, again, Martinette, valid. I mean, maybe not the response I would have chosen personally.
I guess.
I feel
Maybe talk about
right,
it first
you know,
or something.
At the very least. Be like, hey, why'd you do that? But if you're if you are deciding to go immediately to throat slitting, you do you. I'm not gonna yuck anyone's
you're
yum.
Already yeah, there's nothing I can
right.
say.
If you've already made the decision, nothing I can say
you've
or do.
Already jumped
right.
to yeah. That's fair. See, so she murders her mother. Marnette frames Levistus for this crime, as it is his job to uphold Asmodeus's regime. Because, like, you can't, you know. It was also, it's also the loyal constable who slaughtered all the other guards, which left him as the only survivor, you see? And it wouldn't look good if anyone had found out that both the consort and the daughter of the supreme master of the nine hells were both shacking up with this devil.
Yeah, you don't want to be the one that makes Asmodeus a cuck.
Yeah,
you don't
want to
cuck
don't,
Asmodeus.
Don't cuck Asmodeus. I'd wear that as a shirt. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
That's a new Lorecast shirt.
So it was for these transgressions that Levistus was entombed in his ice prison. As part of his punishment, he has to offer safety and help escaping, you know, help with escaping to desperate individuals. He continues to just, you know, strike bargains like an expert. He says, you know, okay, yeah, I'll help you. I'll help you get out of here really, really quickly. If you just, low price of your soul. And so he does. And here he has stayed for a millennia in his little block of ice because he cucked Asmodeus.
I mean, that's just the one story. That's the one version.
That's just the one
I
version.
Like, personally,
indeed.
I kind of like that one because it's got all sorts of saucy behavior.
I like it because it has enough of those little threads to make it, you know, spicy and sus.
For sure, for sure. Well, thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. We'll be back next week with some even more fantastic and possibly saucy lore.
Saucy
lore. I mean, we're going to continue our Hotter Than the Nine Hells series. So when it comes to devils, you can never put the sauciness too far behind them.
It's true. They always saucy.
You can assume sauciness.
Assumed sauciness. I love it.
My name is Sergio.
And I am Mary.
Fare thee well, dear listener. And until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thank you for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, consider following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at D&D Lorecast. Or jumping into the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.